This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. And oh boy, do I have a book for you today. It is so exciting for me to welcome back to Joy on Paper, Kristen Hanna, and the name of her book is The Women. And, well, that says everything, because it is a story about powerful women, too. So I'm so happy to welcome you back to Joy on Paper, Kristen.
Hi, it's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
All of your books are great. But this book, it's not just that it's so beautifully written, but it's also, I think, very timely. We're hearing a lot about Vietnam veterans, and still, after all these years, people still don't quite get their hands around what it means and what they went through. And so your book is so powerfully written. It is so, when I was reading it, I of course get excited all the time when I'm reading your book. And there are points where you cry. There are points where you stop and just, hold your breath. And then the story about Frankie McGrath and about how she becomes a nurse in Vietnam, this process. But when she steps off that plane, I think that is one of the best descriptions I've ever read that really puts the whole thing into focus. And when people say, to writers, use all the senses, well, you did it right there.
Well, that's true. And, that is so important in writing. And I know you have a lot of, writers listening. And it really is about the five senses and world building, And so the idea is that here's, poor Frankie, she's 21 years old, a brand new nursing student, goes to Vietnam, to serve, very naively. And of course, from the moment she lands in the middle of a country at war, she realizes she's over her head. And it was so important for me to have the reader, deeply understand and sort of ask themselves, how would I have felt at this moment? Would I have been ready? And that's really, the writer's job, to paint that picture with words.
And you do, because the minute somebody gets to that point where she gets off the plane, all of these images that people have of the Vietnam War and of that they've seen on MASH, they just fade away. The reality of it. And you it's so stark and it's so well written. It's the pacing is exciting. And I love your pacing, because sometimes it's like you're writing something that's really hard to read, and then you'll just throw out a line like, my daddy told me about men like you. I mean, it's just like, we needed that, to take that breath, of calm down.
Yeah, absolutely. That sort of is the trick too, especially in a novel where, so much is set during the war like this, and it's visceral and it's hard to read and it's sort of overwhelming. You definitely have to have the moments in between that are different and quieter and allow both the reader and Frankie to catch their breath a little bit.
Exactly. And very human. When you write, there's a line, this, there's things going on around the base. It's like there's grenades, there's bombings. And you write this very calm sentence. This did not seem safe.
Oh.
I cracked up when I read that. That was so perfect.
Oh, that's funny. I hadn't thought about that in a while. That is funny. That's fun to point out.
Well, that you have all of those kind of, well, in all of your books, it's like the which book is it where you have she has a steel exterior and then it's like candy floss, but a candy floss heart. Which book is that?
Oh, I wonder what book that was. You're right. I do remember that sentence. That's surprising. Yeah.
I mean, do you remember that? I love that sentence. It's just, again, it was at an important point in the book, and you're reading along, and then you get to this part where she just suddenly you stop and say, candy floss heart. First of all, you think he said, you know, that's a really great observation. So, and in this book, you have, it's, as you say, it's, and everybody who reads it, I don't know, sometimes I can imagine that there were tears, you know, running down your cheek at some point when you're writing.
You know, yeah, I think everyone sort of pictures me as Kathleen Turner in Romancing the Stone, you know, writing at my typewriter and talking into my, but it, and there are books that I have written that make me cry. They don't ever actually make me cry when I'm writing them, because it's just, I think it's a different part of my brain. You know, when I'm writing, my job is very clear, you know, what I'm supposed to do, and trying to find the words to say exactly what I mean is almost a clinical kind of process for me in some ways. So I'm constantly focused on, okay, say this better, say this the right way, say it in as few words as possible, and then move on. And it really isn't until I see the first time I see the book where it's typeset and it looks like a novel and I'm looking for errors instead of writing content, that's when I'm likely to cry.
Well, you know, tell us, you know, about this world. You mentioned world building, and here at the beginning of the book, of course, you have to build this world and get us involved in Frankie's life. So how did you decide where to set it? Because this was the perfect location. Now, I will say, for me, the Vietnam War is very real. I've been working on a book 20 years about the Vietnam War, about the F-105 pilots who were shot down. As you know, during Vietnam, the F-105 plane, these were the pilots who did all the most dangerous runs, and 40% of them were shot down. 40% of the F-105 pilots were shot down. And so I've been doing research and talking to people about Vietnam for all these years. So I like the way you start the story, you build her world, and then you take her into, well, you take her into hell.
Right. And, you know, that it's an interesting point you make, because, I mean, I was a child during the Vietnam War, so it's a personal subject for me as well. I mean, it cast a big shadow over my life, even though I was young. And my best girlfriend's father was an Air Force pilot, and he was shot down and lost. And so starting from the time, I guess I was 10 years old when I got my prisoner of war bracelet with his name on it, and, you know, wore that for decades. He never did come home. And then I saw the way the vets were treated when they came home. And so I've wanted to write this for a very long time. But as you know, there was a very many number of years where the answer was, we don't want to hear about Vietnam. We don't want to read about it. We don't want to talk about it. We just want to pretend that none of this ever happened. And so I think we are now in a moment, and judging by the reaction to the women, I think not only is the country, you know, ready to look back at this issue and to talk about the vets in particular and how they were treated and the war, I think people are actually eager to do it. I did an event two nights ago, and I was speaking to my readers, and there were five Vietnam-era nurses in the audience, and the audience gave them a five-minute standing ovation.
Well, you know, for me, the subject of nurses is very important because my mother became a practical nurse during World War II. She already had a baby, so she couldn't, join one of the military organizations, but she was working with, after a year of training, she was working with the soldiers who were returning for rehab. And she worked a lot with both soldiers who had lost limbs or were paralyzed, and a lot who were blind. So we were always had this background about nurses in the military, because she had really, in a different time, she would have been in the army or one of the military organizations. So. She spent when I was a kid, every time there was a war movie on, she would watch the war movies, but she would watch particularly the ones that featured nurses, like that. I don't know if you ever saw it, So Proudly We Hail. That was her favorite movie. Lorraine Day. My mother sort of looked like Lorraine Day, so it was her favorite, actress. And that's a story about nurses during World War II. So this story, as I'm reading it and I'm thinking, you've really captured something important here for people to understand that, well, as you say, women can be heroes too.
Exactly. And I've been so honored in the writing of this book and now in the promotion of this book to meet with and speak to these women, who are nurses over there. And their grit and resilience and toughness and kindness, it's just off the charts. And, I think it's so nice to sort of bring this book up and remind the country and young women of these nurses and the male vets as well and their service. At a time when they can still, read the book and be a part of the conversation.
And receive the recognition they deserve.
Exactly.
Why I think this is such a timely book is we are hearing over and over about the veterans who are not getting the service they need. And I know this personally because working with the F-105 Warriors, when I started my research, I was concentrating on the pilots because, that's those are the romantic characters. But quickly, I discovered from my research that it were the ground crews, the people who were there on the ground getting the planes ready. They have been fighting ever since Vietnam to get recognition for the cancers and the emphysema that they got because they were working without masks in those days, right? Directly with the fumes, with all of that horrible stuff. And they're sick. And still today, they have to fight the VA to get the coverage they need. So I hope that now with this book, you'll open the eyes to younger people who will say, yeah, well, we should look back and we should help those who are still around and give them the help and recognition they deserve.
Absolutely, Patsy. And, that is, it's one of my great goals. And I will point out that the nurses are having the same struggle right now as your pilots. They were exposed to Agent Orange in great numbers. And, they were losing them to cancers, and they are trying to get help and get benefits and get care from the VA. And all too often they're told, well, it's not the right kind of cancer for you to get these benefits. And so I know one nurse who fought her whole life and ended up passing away and never did get the recognition that she needed or the care that she needed.
Well, I've spent a lot of middle of the night texting back and forth with the mechanics and with the ground crews, and it is crazy that they are required to have witnesses to prove that they were actually around this Agent Orange. I mean, what do they think they were doing filling the F-105 planes with, you know, I mean, it's insane what they've had to go through. And many of them, and some of the guys that I fell in love with, these wonderful, wonderful ground crew, they passed away, and they were still fighting that their cancer, their emphysema, particularly emphysema, which was just, I mean, they all seemed to have gotten it because they're working directly with those fumes. Why? So I hope the younger generation of people who read this book will say, we have to step forward and say, give these people the help they need. They're dying too quickly.
Exactly. And, you know, and I've written about this before, and I think this is a big component in the women. But I think that, you know, when we as a country and we as Americans ask our fellow Americans to go into harm's way to protect us, to serve their country, it is just, unconscionable that we don't care for them fully and responsibly when they come home. And
you're right. And I'm sure that I think every Vietnam vet will want to shake your hand. Just, they will be so grateful that you have brought this to the attention. And, you know, because as you write, some parts are so horrific about when Frankie sits with her first, you know, her first patient. And I just tear up when I think about it. But then the courage and strength of the women. One of my favorite scenes is the Crystal Pier Cottage, where Frankie is now, you know, beyond the war, but it's there in her mind, in her head, and she calls for help. And the story of what the doctor said to her when she went to get help, and then she lands up in the Crystal Pier Cottages, and when her friends, her women, two wonderful women she worked with, served with, knock on that door, I just burst into tears.
I know. You know, I really think for all of the big story here about the war and the, you know, divided America and what it was like in this time period and Frankie's growth, you know, from a naive young woman to a battle-hardened, you know, combat nurse. For all of that, the real beating heart of this story is about female friendship. And it's about, you know, how these three women who would probably never have been friends, you know, absent the war because they come from such different backgrounds, become almost soulmates in the way that they care for each other and hold each other up and protect each other for the whole of their lives.
Well, I know when in that particular scene, I just wanted to put my arms around all three of them.
Yeah, me too.
Did you? I thought, wow, this is so powerful. It's just, of course, brilliant writing. And I know they've already taken it up as, you know, to make a movie into it. And it's going to be a great film. But the words on paper that you put there, it's just, they are fantastic.
Well, thank you so much, Patsy. It was actually a real joy to write this book. You know, I've been writing a long time, and I've written a lot of books, and it's rare when it all comes together in a novel that you think is both, you know, compelling and entertaining and interesting, but also important. And I'm just really proud, like you said, that this book is out here in a time that the Vietnam vets and their families can can read it, and that everybody else can kind of look back on that time period and either remember it or learn from it.
And please, all of you readers and listeners, learn from this book. Read this book, The Women, by Kristen Hanna. Of course, you've heard about her. You know everything, all the great books she's done, The Nightingale and Four Winds and everything. But what she's done here to make people aware of what the horror of Vietnam, and in many ways the disaster that it turned into be. But when you hear about a Vietnam vet on the streets, a Vietnam vet in a homeless shelter, or not getting any care, we can do something about it. We can. And Kristen, I think you've done a wonderful, wonderful service here to everybody by writing this book.
Thank you so, so much. And I will say also that in the back of the book, I have a list of a few selected, you know, resources for further reading, nurses' memoirs and some other kinds of things that if people are, you know, interested and want to learn a little more about this subject, they can find it in the back of the book. And they can look for me on Instagram and Facebook.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining me. And I'm glad that you used the word joy about writing this book, The Women, a fantastic, fantastic novel. And thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you so much. It was good to be here. And good luck with your book.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye now. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow. What a book. And what a woman. Okay. Good. We're going to have a few commercials and then I will be right back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Looking for inspiration? Looking for something that will intrigue you? Then this book is for you. Jim Lamb's poems start out as caterpillars, creepy, crawly, and raw. Then a miracle happens as they transform into colorful, bright, and conspicuous works of art. You can find Jim's new book of poetry, Hurting Butterflies, at Amazon.com. It's the perfect gift for the book lover in your life, even if it's you. Hurting Butterflies, the perfect holiday gift, available on Amazon. Get Hurting Butterflies.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
And I am back, and I am just waiting for my guest to call in. It's going to be funny. The name of the book is 15 Days, And it is a fascinating book. It is a really quite unusual. I get a lot of books and I get a lot of writers, but very seldom do I get a book that's written by, well, I think 36 or 38 writers. And it is a collaboration, and it is one of these books that just comes along. People say, how do you get ideas for books? Well, during the pandemic, of course, everybody was going crazy. And people in New York, of course, were leaving, and people were didn't know what was happening in the city. And so they were going off, and people who could afford it would get out of the city. And people who couldn't afford it, of course, would be stuck in the city. And so this book is called 14 Days, a collaborative novel. And it is so fascinating because I don't know, I really don't know how they got it. I don't know how they got it all together. But it was a group of writers, and it started really with an author who's been on the program before, Douglas Preston, and he and it's Preston and Child, of course, write different series together, and they got the idea for that. And so it's a book where they've asked authors to get together and write one book, each of them do a chapter. So it's really fascinating. Okay, I have to I have to just find out why Mr. Douglas Preston hasn't called in, because I he was supposed to be on Tuesday. We're having fun here. Anyway, so I'm going to talk about the book because one way or the other, I am going to get not all of them. I don't think I could get 36 of the authors on. But I will get as many as I can, because it's just, you know, when you think about it, to get 36 authors to write one book, each writing a chapter that turns out to be very cohesive, because it is a story about a building in New York where the people who have not been able to flee the pandemic, and they're stuck in the city. And what happens, and it's, I suppose, in a way for all of us, what happened to us during the pandemic? Well, if you were in a building in New York City, I mean, I can't imagine being in a building in New York City during the pandemic. You were supposed to social distance yourself. How were you supposed to social distance yourself in an elevator? I mean, you just couldn't do it. Well, and I did have a few of the people who, my publicists who do the bookings for me, they would be in an elevator. They lived in buildings with elevators, and they would have to wait one, because everybody was so panicky at the beginning. One person in an elevator in New York City, and everybody's waiting to go up and down. It was insane. One of the publicists said to me, well, she lasted about 2 weeks doing this, you know, going up with maybe two people in an elevator, when normally there would be 14 people in the elevator. And at that point, she said she couldn't take it anymore. And so she just packed a bag and moved back home with her mother. Of course, you have an apartment in New York. You can't just walk out on it. And so here she is paying for an apartment in New York and living in Albany with her mother. And and it turned out actually, in a way, sort of funny, because she had moved away from Albany for, you know, 20 years. It was working in New York City and had an apartment and was paying rent. And all through that beginning of the pandemic, she's still paying rent and paying rent and paying rent. And meanwhile, she's in Albany and she's still working. She's still, I remember, you know, a few weeks after the whole mess started, particularly in New York, where everybody was social distancing and everything was closed down. And she was back home in Albany and in her mother's backyard. And she said, you know, I was working. I could still work. I could still, you know, do my bookings and send out messages. And so she was having lots of fun, actually. And she said, why can't I continue doing this? And So she is in Albany now. She had to keep paying her rent. Of course, you couldn't. She couldn't sublet it, and she couldn't. It was an empty apartment. She's paying for an empty apartment. And at one point, when things were really bad in New York, and they were, you know, everybody was terrified. She made a quick trip back to, you know, get, because she, it was the beginning, you know, it was still cold weather. So she went back to get her summer clothes. She did a quick trip back, and they were still not letting people, you know, now at that point they were letting three or four people in the elevator, and everybody with masks. And she got into her apartment and got all her summer clothes and looked around. It was dusty. She was lucky it wasn't broken into, because quite a few, we didn't hear about it. They didn't put it in the news very often, that a lot of people who left their apartments empty, they were burgled. I mean, it's as simple as that. And maybe even sometimes by, you know, the landlords or the caretakers or whoever, because their apartments were empty for months and months. And so she came back. She was happy that nothing was stolen, because she had left valuables. You know, she just left. And so she packed up her summer clothes and looked around and realized, you know, I don't want to come back here. I don't ever want to come back here. I don't care. And so, so eventually she, you know, she went back to her mother's place. And since she was doing so well, I mean, she kept booking. She was always, you know, contacting me. I have a new author for you. I have a new author for you. Would you like to, you know, talk to this author? And so I said, you know, you seem to be happier. You're like really happy. You're always so cheerful. And she said, well, it was so nice to have the fresh air, to, you know, not have to wear a mask up there. She didn't have to, you know, other than in the grocery store where people were wearing masks, but she was, you know, just outdoors. So now she's living in Albany. She's now has her own house and not far from her mother, which is also a benefit, she said, because she had forgotten. She said, you know, living in New York and being, you know, relatively young and, you know, having an active life, she spent her life running around and not really cooking and not really eating that well. And then she got home cooking and she said, oh my goodness, what have I been missing? And she's very happy there, and she continues to book with me. She's always contacting me, and she's happy. And I think this is what is happening. I think more and more people realize that a lot of apartments are empty in New York. For all the talk about the cost of living in New York, there are still a lot of apartments empty, and of course buildings. Because I remember when before the pandemic, I had gone to New York City to meet with some of the publicists and to go to their buildings, and they were so busy and would talk about crowded elevators. I went to one agent's. I went to meet a literary agent who was on my program, and I mean the elevator was like it was terrible. Actually, I hated it, and that was before the pandemic. So but she also, she's an agent, and she now works outside, and she lives and works outside in Connecticut. And she gave up her office, which she had had for, I think, 35 years, something like that, because she said, well, there's no point in it. And so it's an interesting dynamic that we've gone through here. So I don't know what happened to Mr. Douglas, and he was on the program before. I really like him, Mr. Preston, about his books, because I really, really, really enjoyed his last book, which is Dead Mountain. Okay, well, why don't you play a song, and I'll try calling him, because it's getting late. You know, I'm a really nice, patient person. Go ahead, Big Ed, and play a song for us.
Growing in the town, sometimes I can't hardly face another day. I am assured that God
working for my good. It's working for my good. Sometimes the clouds hang low. I can't even see my way. I ask the question when things will ever change for me.
Sci-fi readers, this is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2022 First Contact novel, Prodigals, by Alan Dean Foster, with stellar narration by Fred Berman. Now, let's download the book buzz. Extraterrestrial invaders make first contact and demand resources or threaten to attack major cities on Earth. Five representatives are sent to negotiate, including Devali Dev Mukherjee, a NASA consultant specializing in alien lifeforms. The requests for simple staples such as corn are easily met, and Dev is welcomed inside their alien spaceship to observe their advanced tech, such as food synthesizing equipment which delivers anything Dev requests. A variety of alien species work together on board with hundreds of automatons, but no one can tell Dev why a sudden alien emergency sends the spaceship out of the solar system with him and his companions on board. When the captain refuses to return them to Earth, Dev searches the ship for answers, and he uncovers secrets their captors have been hiding. A chance discovery leads Dev to a moral dilemma, and he's left questioning everything he knows, while the group looks to him to find a way to get them safely home. But he fears none of them will ever see Earth again. Alan Dean Foster is the acclaimed author of movie tie-ins for Star Wars, Alien, and Transformers. He was awarded the IAMTW Grandmaster Scribe Award in 2008. He is also a best-selling science fiction and fantasy author in his own right, including the popular Pip and Flinks novels and the founding of the Commonwealth series. Besides traveling, he enjoys listening to both classical music and heavy metal. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
Okay, thank you, Bria, for that great book buzz. And Bria is going to be the guest host on Joy on Paper in February, on February 27th. That's Tuesday, February 27th. So you can look forward to a wonderful interviews that she does with the sci-fi authors that she loves. And you can always hear that in her voice when she brings on an author. It's somebody whose books she just loves. And so I'm really excited that she's going to take over Joy on Paper again. And one of the great things about her, she has this motto, rekindle the wonder. And that's what she does with her book buzzes. And I'm so thrilled that she is our special correspondent and our guest host quite often. And we're going to have her every month now. Just to do these special sci-fi hours. Now, one of the things also, when I've been, you know, I was really grateful there that Big Ed jumped in with a song from Kevin B. Edwards, who, of course, has been a guest on Joy on Paper. He is just such a wonderful person. And his book, he has written children's books, including Kevin Turns Fear into Feet, which is a book that tells really the story of his life, because he was young, as a young boy, he was afraid of, you know, getting out there, and he was a shy kid. And then he turns out that he's got a great voice, and he got out there and really started showing himself as a person who not only can sing, but can connect with people. And he's a wonderful, wonderful guy. And he has, this is Black History Month. And I hope that what you will do is go to his website. It's Kevin B. Edwards. And you will see on there a lot of his songs he has that you can listen to and download directly from his website. And it's Kevin B. Edwards, and he's just fantastic. And he now tours the world. He goes to many locations and brings music of joy to people. And I'm just so grateful to him. From the first time when he first contacted me with his first book, I said, this is somebody who is, he has found that joy on paper that I'm always talking about. Because when he started writing, he wanted so much to bring the story of success and the story of being able to really, you know, concentrate on yourself and find the best in yourself. And that's what Kevin has done. And so that's Kevin B. Edwards, and his website is there for you to go to and download some of his music. All of his songs are beautiful, and I really enjoy talking to him. I invited him back on. I think last time I talked to him, he was on tour in Italy. So he certainly turned from being a shy guy to being out there and really giving a lot of joy to people around the world. So I'm, again, thrilled that we played his song. Now, next week, I have Lane Martin Jr., is going to be back on. And of course, he is in the Nashville Hall of Fame for songwriters. So I'm excited that he's going to be on. And then at the same time, Haley Woolbright is going to be back on Joy on Paper, because it's Valentine's Day. And it's a time that, you know, I like to talk to people who sing, and I like to talk to hear about their journey into the musical world. So they will be on. And when I'm, you know, we had a little promo for Jim Lamb's Herding Butterflies. It is a wonderful book to give as a gift. It's exactly the right type of gift you can give to anybody that really needs sort of a pick me up on Valentine's Day, because there are poems in that book that will touch the people's hearts. That there are poems that are funny, there are poems that are serious. They're all very thoughtful. And, we were just talking about the Vietnam War and with Kristen Hanna. And Jim Lamb was in Vietnam during the war, and he wrote a book about it, and Orange Socks. And so, it doesn't matter where you've been or what you've done in life, poetry is a way to really go into yourself, find something from your own life, and write about it. And I think that you will enjoy Hurting Butterflies. It's available online, and you should really get the print book, because it is so beautiful inside. Jim Lamb also likes to do artwork, and so many of his designs and artwork are included in the book. Really, really lovely. He's an example, as you know. He was on the other day of somebody who has found that joy on paper that I've talked about. And of, you know, what I enjoyed mostly about talking to Kristen Hanna this time is that she sounded so joyful too, talking about it and thinking about what she had written, and knowing that her work is touching people's hearts. Her work is always touching, and it's always heartfelt, and it's always empowering. But I think this new book, The Women, has a very, very special purpose at this time, because people are talking about going to war. We went through Vietnam. We went through, the first Iraq war, the second Iraq war, the war that's going on now, and we have more wars, which is, it's hard to believe. Really, I think, although, many of us were very young during the end of when Vietnam ended, we didn't think we were going to be going to so many wars, especially a war in Europe. It still boggles my mind. I can't get my hands around it. I think about it. How can we be at war? And perhaps if people will read this book, The Women, the sort of the horrors of war become more of a reality. And we think about, really, where are we going and what are we headed towards if we continue continue this and without understanding what we're doing. So I'm hopeful that Kristen Hanna is going to may have an impact, particularly, as I said, because for me too, worrying and caring about the veterans, and particularly when we hear these stories about them being in the streets, and we've gone through this cold weather, and you see it, you might be driving down the street and you see somebody very old and they're out there in the cold, and you think, how can they do that? And if you think that they are from Vietnam era, if they're that old and they're from the Vietnam era, what they saw in Vietnam and they're seeing in their head today while they're freezing, it's heartbreaking. So do read Kristen Hanna's book and look at the resources in the back for more information. And then, did you realize that you can volunteer at VA hospitals? And you can donate books to VA hospitals. It's a wonderful thing to do. There's all sorts of programs. Contact your local VA hospital and volunteer. They need help. They have reading hours, they have book meetings, and of course, if you're an author, one of the things you can do is set up a little workshop and go to a VA hospital. Right in St. Petersburg, Florida, there's a wonderful VA's hospital, and they have authors who come in and read aloud and then talk about it, and also authors who go in there to do research. And if you are writing a book about veterans, there's no better place to go than to a VA hospital, and they'd love to have the company, and they'd love to have the opportunity and to find somebody who cares about them and who will talk to them, because many of the veterans, particularly of the Vietnam era, they're getting up there in years, and some of them don't have a lot of family, and they are in the hospitals. Well, if they're in the St. Pete Hospital, a Bayshore, they're there for the rest of their lives, and they get lonely. And you can be a volunteer, and find out also through your church or synagogue, because they also have groups that get together and go to the VA hospital. I know they do that in St. Petersburg and in other towns. I know several people up north who also volunteer at VA hospitals, and it's a wonderful thing to do. As I said, it's particularly if you're a writer, do a little workshop or bring your books and just talk to them. That's what they need, because they get very lonely and very frightened, and life has not been easy for them. So when I think of the men that I've spoken to, the ground crews for the F-105 Warriors, I spoke to so many, and they were always up in the middle of the night, which works for me, because I get up at 4 o'clock usually, and I start working. So it worked out for me that I could talk to a lot of veterans at 4 o'clock in the morning. But anyway, so it's been an interesting day. I am sorry about Douglas Preston. I don't know what happened to him. We had some kind of a problem. But anyway, his book, it's called 14 Days, and it's about a group who write a book in 14 days. Anyway, Ed is taking me out of here, and I'm glad it's a weekend. I need a weekend. It is weekend. It's Thursday. Everybody, have a wonderful, wonderful weekend, and stay warm, and send a book to a vet. Bye-bye now.